it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is angry music. What is this? This is angry. It's very mean.
Is apparently angry?
Huh?
It's Welcome to the New Era.
Oh, I couldn't tell what the... Remember, I'm not great with lyrics.
I have no idea what that was either.
Oh, okay. Well, now I feel bad.
We've got, well, I wouldn't listen to that. We've got an intern person coming in to replace Frank White.
Yes, allegedly.
Oh, the new era of Kay Barnes. Gotcha.
Yes. Okay, yep. So 12:30 p.m. today, we will probably carry at least some of this news conference for you if it's on time. Deron McGee, who is the chairman of the Jackson County Legislature, is set to do a news conference to announce, according to multiple sources, that the interim county executive will be a very popular mayor that we had in the city for a while. Kay Barnes, remember, city mayors in Kansas City are limited to two terms. So she served two terms before Mark Funkhauser, for those who remember those days. And she was mayor when a lot of the downtown revitalization happened, when the T-Mobile Center work, then Sprint Center work was underway, and Power and Light and all those kinds of things. It sounds like she is going to be the one that they're going to name, that he is going to name to serve in an interim capacity. She can't, and there's a lot of procedure here, but remember, they can't. She can't take that job until after the results are certified, which will come October 6th-ish, 6th to 8th, middle of next week. But then at that point, she could take that over, and that's for up to 30 days until they name the legislature together, name somebody that would take the next, the rest right. of the term, basically. And it could be her.
It could be. I would think it wouldn't be, just because she's served as mayor, and unless she's really enjoys being the county executive, I would just assume she's been retired for a while and she doesn't necessarily need to go back to that.
I have no idea what she's been up to since then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Everybody talks kindly of her. Yeah. That's kind of where yesterday when we were talking to Dave Helling, that's kind of what I was asking without asking it. Do we have any retired, you know, we sort of have a pool of county executives and county leaders and city leaders and sheriffs that kind of rotate between a little bit. We do this with superintendents too. They retire and then you need somebody for a year. You need somebody for a year and a half. And who better than to go to somebody who is willing to take something on for a little while.
Yeah.
So yeah, we will probably find that out a little bit later today. It's a great choice for those of you who lived here during the, great choice that not everybody is pro progress. And so that no doubt, had some controversy associated with it. That precedes me by just a little bit.
Yeah.
I moved here just a few months before T-Mobile Center opened, Sprint Center. But at the time, she was the one that kind of put her neck out and said, let's revitalize downtown, and look at it now.
Yeah. I mean, out of that, I don't think she was responsible for it, but the streetcar and
all that grew out of that.
All of that grew out of
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, new terminal at KCI grew out of that.
That's honestly what you needed for Frank White, is you need somebody who's going to turn the temperature down a little bit too, because she's so beloved and quite frankly, lovable.
Yeah.
Like, she's somebody that is not just respected, but people have a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling about her.
And experienced at negotiating. And experienced at the politics. And that was a really big project to go forward and say, we're going to take this part of downtown that is all these empty buildings, and we're going to build what is now Power and Light out of that. And a lot of the funding complications that were associated with that, and T-Mobile Center, that was very forward thinking. She's Democrat, so she's the right party, because as we know, it had to be that. And so she was the first woman elected as mayor of Kansas City in 1999. And then she was reelected in 2003. So in 2007 is when she was replaced by Mark Funkhauser, and then eventually Sly James.
Yep.
Were you here for the Funkhauser time?
I was not here for Funkhauser. I was here for Sly James.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That was an interesting period of time with Mark Funkhauser because he was so eccentric. Is that a word you used yesterday? Eccentric. He was the definition of eccentric. Mm-hmm. And then Sly James came in and it was a new world when Sly James came in.
He was the bow tie guy, right?
He's the bow tie guy.
Sly James was the bow tie guy.
Who still, if you see him out in public, he still introduces himself to strangers as former Kansas City Mayor Sly James. I had a girlfriend come to town a couple of years ago, and after we went to dinner, she went to Green Lady Lounge, which is one of the best jazz clubs in town. And it was busy, and it was one of those things where you just go up to the big booths, and if there are two seats, you sit with strangers. And she sat down, and she texted me that night and said, I just met your former mayor because he introduced himself to me
as former
Mayor Sly James. Mm. So, you know.
The first thing I would think of when I see Sly James is, oh, okay, when are you going to tear those buildings down? Because that was his thing. It was his big thing was there's a lot of empty houses in Kansas City and we're going to tear them down. We're going to tear 20,000 houses down and never did.
Sly James is available.
Yeah, he's not.
He's available. He's not. I mean, he's very busy with consulting. I mean, he's not just sitting around.
He's not Kay Barnes, though.
No, he's not. But he could be the county. That's a fascinating idea. In part because he was hired in the months preceding the vote on the tax to extend the tax to build the stadiums. He was hired to do the PR, basically, to be the public face of it. Some of you might remember when we interviewed him, and I was so put off by him. And I'm aware that he's like this, but he just really took for granted and was very kind of indignant about the idea that when you ask him a question about why people should vote for this tax, he was very much like, of course they should vote for it.
Yeah.
Why are you stupid for even thinking that they shouldn't? And it was his attitude about it that turned me off, that made me not want to vote for.
Right. Which is why
for the extension,
like as far as if he's going to replace, like become the next county executive, not just the interim, that there's a maybe if he has kind of a charm offensive because he was not that well liked.
But he got stuff
when
done.
He was mayor.
He doesn't. My thought
what
is
what did he get done? Like, I'm not trying to be combative. Yeah. I just honestly don't remember.
No, that's fair. He got the vote set for the new terminal. I know some of you don't like this, but the vote for the new terminal was scheduled and it didn't look like it was going to pass. Mm-hmm. And he single-handedly stepped in and said, we are not going to take this vote with it looking like this. We're not going to have this vote with it looking like it might not pass. And he canceled it. He canceled the public vote and said, we're going to wait a year. And so that's exactly what happened. And he was right. It passed 75-25 when it finally passed. He was just, you know, maybe he's a little bullish. Maybe he's not a sweetheart. Maybe he's not full of charm and charisma. But I sort of think as long as he doesn't want to run for that job, and I don't think he would run to be county executive. But if what you need for 14 months is somebody to come in and fix some things, he's got the experience to fix some things. Mm. It's an interesting thought. It didn't occur to me until 5 minutes ago, but
yeah, I think that it's just Kay Barnes it was a more effective mayor. And I think it's also recency bias would be against him too. It's like, weren't we done with you? Like, didn't we exile you to the past? Like, why are you coming back up?
The name is also not one that I've seen. I mean, the names that are coming up are the Democratic Party chair for Jackson County and Phil Lavota and Dan Tarwater and Deron McGee's name is coming up. There are names that are more closely associated with the county right now. I was just looking up Troy Schulte, who just got a new job on April 1st. He was the county administrator for Jackson County, which is like the city manager for a city. That's the equivalent for the county. But he just took a new job 6 months ago in Lebanon, Missouri. So I don't think he would, but that he would be the ideal choice, but he already has a job that he probably wants to stay in.
I mean, but anyway, the Frank White stuff's over. That's the other reason.
Oh, is it over? Is it ever going to be over?
The other reason why I think it's good that we have Kay Barnes there is because she's a more effective communicator. Whereas Frank White, I don't really have a high appreciation for what his public persona was, other than he was a former baseball player and certainly beloved for that in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get a job as a manager for the Royals, and then, you know, decided to become a politician locally, which, good for you. You wanted to help improve the area. But he got so, to use a phrase I used earlier, combative towards the end with the assessment tax. And, you know, when we had Dave Helling on yesterday, he was like, it's not necessarily all his fault. That happened.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody thought it was, but that's not the point. Hurricane Katrina wasn't George W. Bush's fault.
Or the FEMA administrator's fault.
Right, but his mismanagement of it is what sank, and, you know, it totally sank his political career and his presidency in the second term. So you have to take accountability for things, and that's something he was refusing to do.
Yeah, there were opportunities along the way, many opportunities. And keep in mind, Dave Helling, who has a better memory of history than I do, I didn't really start paying attention because there wasn't really a reason to until the assessments, until that mess happened. And he had so many opportunities to be a leader, to take own, even if it wasn't his fault. You're the top guy. You're the one that people elected. These are your constituents. There were so many opportunities to take ownership of that and try to fix it and empathize with people about it. It didn't help that his assessment did not go up on his house. And people didn't like that. Yeah. They thought that was intentional. There were just so many opportunities that even if it wasn't his fault, it's rarely ever the leader's fault directly, you know, when things happen. But the leader takes the fall. And he didn't argue for why he should keep that job. He didn't argue about his accomplishments, maybe because there were not any. And he couldn't build consensus in the legislature. I mean, the budget not being passed was a big deal.
Going back to the Sly James thing where you said he was kind of countered what you, when you asked a question, dared to ask a question about the stadium, things like that. That is kind of a virus within the county legislature, is you, if you dare to say, well, maybe the people of Jackson County don't want the stadium.
Right.
They're like, how dare you?
Or they don't care if it stays.
Yeah. They're like, what? Well, they're wrong. They're stupid. No, you guys need to make the case that it's worth it to stay here. And that's, if Kay Barnes wants to change that trajectory, which it seems like the Royals and the Chiefs are on right now, where they might leave the county, might leave the state, then they need to do something to make it more palatable for the citizens of Jackson County, not just say, well, because of the jobs. What jobs? The construction jobs? Okay, those are temporary, but fine. Good construction jobs.
People on the Missouri side can take the jobs on the Kansas side.
Right.
I mean, that's...
And if you work here, you can work there.
Yeah.
On top of that, there's jobs in Kansas. If you're listening to... I think it's also, when we interview these people, we're in a different position as them because we're broadcasting to both sides of the state line.
Yeah.
They only care about one side.
Yeah.
And I get that, but like when it's... If the benefit is, well, there's some just barely above minimum wage jobs that'll be lost, people don't really care.
Yeah. And the unfortunate timing of the vote was that it was the same time or about 6 months after those assessments came out.
Yeah.
And maybe this isn't fair, but I think if the assessments had been, if that had not happened, maybe the vote would have passed. And those two things have nothing to do with each other. The assessments going up so much and the request to extend the sales tax to fund the stadiums. Those two things have nothing to do with each other. But in people's minds, because the assessments were so goofy and it's in Jackson County, they connected the two.
Yeah.
And they were still mad about how much more money they were paying. And they said, I'm tired of paying more money for things. I'm not gonna pass anything that asks me for money. Even though the vote was just to extend a tax they're already paying, nothing would have changed. People just don't trust government. And that's interesting going forward because we're still in the assessments mess.
Now, the only way that it would be sold is if there was a case, and nobody would believe this, that, well, the teams might leave Kansas City.
Yeah, or come up with a different funding source.
Might leave the entire area. And if they leave the entire, that, if you don't vote for this, then the team, and that nobody's ever had the guts to make that case because most people know the Chiefs aren't leaving.
They're not leaving.
I mean, Clark Hunt isn't leaving the area. His dad would be rolling over in his grave. The Royals could, but
there was talk of that.
The MLB would have to sign off on that, and there's no indication that that's happening either. So.
Yeah, there was talk at one point of cities that might be interested.
Nashville
was the big one. I think Austin came up, but there was not any. That kind of just came up as a scare tactic a little bit.
Yeah.
Nobody actually believed that.
Coming up, speaking of, you want to take the calls?
Sure,
take
why calls. Not?
All right, 913-586-7798. Unless they're calling just to tell us we got something wrong. But
we're not in the mood for that.
Oh, they left. They're gone. Okay, good. Thank you. Live radio, everybody. It's always fun.
Is that really? Well, that's hilarious. What did we get wrong? We didn't get anything wrong.
There's a, who knows? His name isn't Funkhauser, it's Funkhauser. Coming up, here's a scary fact for you. Kansas City has 200 domestic violence cases that get heard in court every single day. 200 cases. That seems like a lot even for a city our size. Here's the scarier thing. They're all heard by one judge.
Busy.
Busy, busy judge. Mm-hmm. 200 cases this woman has to hear every single day. We'll talk about this absolute mismanagement, what they're trying to do to fix it, coming up in just a few minutes on Midday.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and with that, Channel 41 has been doing a series looking at the domestic violence court system. And one part of that series focused on the approach that Kansas City Municipal Court leaders are taking here. One judge oversees thousands of domestic violence violations each month. This is Judge Courtney Wachal. It's W-A-C-H-A-L if I'm mispronouncing it. Court leaders say the process, which they call a hub of judicial innovation, sets Kansas City apart from court systems around the country. She is of the 16th Judicial Circuit Court of the Missouri Kansas City Municipal Division. She has exclusive jurisdiction over all domestic violence violations in Kansas City city limits. She handles nearly 200 cases a day.
It's insane.
Monday through Friday, starting at 9 a.m. And she said, and this is sort of how the court system is set up, but she said Kansas City is unusual in that more than 90% of domestic violence cases are filed in municipal court. There are no shortage of domestic violence cases filed at that level. Usually, they say most domestic violence cases in Kansas City are filed as ordinance violations in municipal court rather than as felonies or misdemeanors at the county level. That includes everything. Mm-hmm. Violation of orders of protection, stalking, child abuse, intimate partner violence, child endangerment, you bet. The only cases that reach the county level are the more serious cases like homicide. And I can't tell if she thinks this is a good thing. But she says it's important to acknowledge in Kansas City, it's not easy. If you want, it just sounds incredibly confusing to me.
Yeah.
First of all, she said, if you want an order of protection, you have to go to the Jackson County Courthouse. If they violate the order of protection, you get the charge in the municipal courthouse. And if they get charged with a felony, it's at the Jackson County Courthouse. Okay.
So they're trying to do like a treatment first type mm-hmm. of program where and they're working with a bunch of other groups to like Fathers for Change, early intervention bond classes, mm-hmm. relationship and sexual violence prevention and compliance. The problem with it is, are we seeing good results? Because right. again, you still have 200 cases a day,
right?
That's a continuing, and I'm assuming several of those are repeat offenders, probably within 200,
yeah.
probably maybe 25 to 30%, maybe yeah. even more than that. The other thing is, last year in Kansas City, for the entire year, we had 12 domestic violence homicides. This year, we have 18.
It's crazy. It's been and it's a story
and we've still
done
have
a lot. Yeah,
3 months left in yeah. the year.
Here's where, she doesn't point this out, but it's not unusual for judges to specialize in a particular kind of case. I volunteer for CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates for Kids, and there are juvenile, they don't even call them judges, they call them commissioners. There are commissioners that preside over those cases. And the advantage of judges specializing is that you get to know the lawyers, you get to know the cases, you get to know the kinds of cases. That specializing is a good thing. that it's you're a more effective judge if you understand those cases more, mm-hmm. And understand that kind of law more. Only one judge, though?
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's a lot.
200 cases a day?
200 cases a day.
I mean, and also, are they, like, do we have mass, like, is it one at a time, like a traffic judge?
I also wonder, she can't possibly have the time for all those to appear in her court. Some of those have got to just be via paperwork.
Right. And then you just sign off, they plead guilty, and then fine. It's still crazy. I'll just go back to, we've had 18 homicides and there's 3 months left. If this is working, why are homicides increasing? And I know that the article from 41 is all about, well, there's help on the way. So hopefully this, you know, some things change, but I think that this is showing that Jackson County, Kansas City takes certain cases and goes, well, you know, what are you going to do? That's going to always happen. So
I feel like we're not taking domestic violence seriously enough. That's what it shows.
It's like, oh, this is inevitable. And you know what? That's just, that's something that happened between two people. That's not a threat to the public writ large. So, you know, big deal. I really think that that's the attitude way too many people have.
So keep in mind, we have a new Jackson County prosecutor, Melissa Johnson, and they said part of the solutions involves moving more cases to the county and state level.
Yep.
Good. Get them out of municipal court. And Melissa Johnson has committed to taking on more serious cases. Why do I have such a visceral reaction to the idea that domestic violence cases are handled with a punishment of fines and not that any of the domestic violence, fine. If you want to make a violation of an order of protection a fine, fine. But child endangerment, I mean, any of the, because what they're basically saying is, unless it's a homicide or a really serious felony, it's going to be handled in municipal court. And those are fines associated with that. They said in the court setting, the maximum punishment for a domestic violence offender is 6 months in jail per charge. Is it possible that the punishments are not severe enough and that changing that
might
help?
That might help as far as some prevention.
Well, at least protecting victims from offenders because they're in jail longer.
That's exactly it. Yeah. That was my point. I was from a deterrence effect. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a lot of people who are like, well, I would have punched her, but I'm not gonna because I don't want to actually go to jail instead of paying a fine. Like, people just don't think like that in the heat of the moment, especially when they're violent animals.
Right.
You're right. If it keeps them out of the house longer, then that's better. The only problem with that, I guess, would be would people be less willing to report cases of domestic violence if it meant that he was going to go to jail and then be out of the house and not making money? And who's paying my bills?
They might be more likely to.
Or helping pay the bills.
Would they be more likely to report the domestic violence because it's safer? You don't. Because I think right now people feel like it's a really weak system. Mm. And that idea of whether you report domestic violence or not is so complicated. There are so many layers to that. Not every, where are you going to go?
Yeah.
You know, if you leave, where people always say to domestic violence victims, well, why don't you just leave? Well, you try it sometime. You have kids, you have pets.
Yep.
Where are you going to go if you don't have family here? There's not always shelter space that takes the pets. And yes, that matters to people. Domestic violence is a mind game. It's a control game. It can work with both genders back and forth, right? But it's all about, you need me, you know, I'm going to beat you in 1 minute and then I'm going to say, I love you in the next. And that gets really all jumbled up in your head. Maybe you might be more likely to report it if you knew this threat was going to be out of your life for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very,
but then when they come back in, I mean, the mentality is then when he comes back, he's going to be even more pissed off because you sent me to jail.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's why I didn't get a restraining order I considered it.
Texter, just stop. Sorry.
Do I want to know or do I not want to know?
Why are you painting this as only men attacking women?
I just said. The words just came out of my mouth. But the vast majority, you don't have to like it, and I don't have the percentage in front of me. We can look this up.
I'm looking it up right now.
But the vast majority of domestic violence offenders are men. And the vast majority of domestic violence victims are women. Not all of them, but the majority.
And honestly, yeah, as a man, I can do so much more violence than it, yeah, God,
physically.
Obviously, this is never something that has ever happened in my house. Right. Katie and I don't even fight.
Right.
But it's, if we got into a fight, I would win that fight pretty easily.
Yes.
If she hit me, it wouldn't have, you know,
you
half of the force of, right. I would feel it emotionally. But yeah.
You'd be like, what the?
It's 24% of non-fatal domestic violence victimizations involve male victims. But that is, sorry, that's a lot of times it's male on male violence. Mm-hmm. It actually, for women attacking men, it's around 10%.
Yeah, that's, yeah. We didn't make those numbers up. It's just right. The reality. And a lot of it is exactly what we were said. It is, listen, I'm 5 feet tall. I'm not very intimidating. I'm not hurting somebody, but I could easily be hurt by somebody else.
Right.
That's just the fact. It's the way our bodies are built. And so, the homicide problem, the domestic violence homicide problem is getting a lot of attention, and we cannot figure out why it's up so dramatically this year. But like you said, the year is not out.
Yeah.
They know it. I don't know what you do about it. We don't have enough time in the show.
And domestic
to try to figure
violence,
it out.
Unlike regular old school street violence, tends to actually increase during winter months,
right,
as well, because people are inside more, they're around each other more, there's the stress from the holidays, all that stuff, and end of the year issues and all, you know, it's not like you can do that with the summer and say, right, well, summer's over, so hopefully homicide rates will go down because it's not as hot, so people aren't as agitated, right, and also they're not out as much.
It increased a lot during COVID, yeah, exactly for that reason, because very often domestic violence goes on to violence against the kids. And teachers are mandatory reporters. Schools are mandatory reporters, and kids weren't in schools. And so they were at home. Also, people weren't leaving home as much. So there wasn't, you know, there wasn't as much. You could hide it better,
right,
and not report it.
All right. Coming up next, we're going to talk about this. Stop showing up to work sick.
Oh, yeah.
Stop it. Your coworkers hate it. Your boss may appreciate it. But everyone else might encourage it, might demand it. But everyone else around you absolutely hates it. So stop doing it, I say with a nose full of congestion. We'll talk about that next.
Is showing up sick frowned upon? Survey says yes.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly,
you know,
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland,
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Which I would say, God, I hope so.
Yeah, I'm shocked it's even a question.
Yeah,
of
me
course
too.
It is.
This was done on behalf of Zip Fizz. So it's a survey of 2,000 people. It looked at the approaches to cold and flu and the etiquette around resting and not working. 31% said there is no longer a badge of honor or admirable quality to people who just tough it out or show up to work coughing.
Playing hurt.
Yeah. Quarter of Americans strongly believe it would impress bosses or superiors, like, because of how dedicated you are to the company. Right. I'm willing to show up sick. The survey found that about 20% of people have gone to work or a social gathering while ill in the last 12 months. 86% are concerned about their own well-being when others come to work sick. So it's a little contrary. We don't want others to get us sick, so we don't want them to come to work sick,
right,
but some of us still think that they should.
I think this is also probably increased as work from home has become an alternative,
sure,
that some people might have. Like, can,
yeah,
you do this at home? Then do it at home.
Right.
Why would you come in? 64% say that they consider it selfish if someone shows up sick at work sick. I I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't agree with that. I don't think it's selfish. I think it's people who are scared. I think if you're showing up for work and you're deathly ill, you're afraid of, you know, somebody else getting ahead of you. You're afraid of somebody, you know, it not looking like you're a hard enough worker.
Yeah.
You work at a high pressure job where you're expected to always be doing, you know, performing at a high level, whatever it is. So I could see it just being fear. I rarely get sick. This is the first time in years I have some congestion right now because Finn has been bringing home viruses for like 3 weeks now. Just like he's bringing home turtles and puppy dogs and kittens or something. Just bring, hey, can
I mean, schools are germ factories. So
yeah. Can norovirus live with us for a little bit? Yeah. It's literally that I was at home yesterday cause he was so, he gets so sick that he throws up, not from a cold, like not like he has a stomach flu. He throws up because it's the post nasal drip. He's been trying to give me his cold for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not so sick that I would stay home.
I also,
because I'm not sneezing. There's nothing running.
Also, this job is a little different. When you talk for a living, it's different because if you don't stay home and not do the job, it's just going to get worse. If you try to keep working and do a show when you're not, when your voice is gone,
But
you're never going to recover.
The secret thing though, is as a man is when you get that congestion, you just sound so much better.
You have a deep enough voice as it is. No, you don't need anything deeper.
I can go deeper. I can get this lower.
You got that? So
sometimes my hand gets forced. I don't know.
Yeah. So I also understand, and the survey reflects this, that some people cannot afford to take off work. Not everybody has sick time. Not everybody. A lot of people work for themselves. My dad owned his own business, and that was a big reason why he ended up having gangrene in his foot that got so bad they had to amputate his foot because he worked for himself, and it was the summer, and he did commercial HVAC for a living, and he was buying nobody else to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
I was an independent contractor full time for 4 years, and I worked for myself. And if I didn't work, I didn't get paid. And there was, you know, it was very simple math. And so I remember there were a couple of days where I would throw up, and I worked from home. I would throw up and then work some more and then throw up and work some more. And because the work had to get done, whether I felt like it or not. And so not everybody has the luxury of sick time.
No, when I first started in radio, I was hourly, and I was trying to support my family and, you know, we had a wife and kids, and she was working a minimum wage job too. And I was fortunate that that station, they were like, we will just pile as much work on you as possible. And I was working about 80 hours a week. I don't get sick. That was the sickest I've ever been. I had a cold that, because I was working 12 hours a day, turned into bronchitis, then turned into pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't miss a day of work. And nobody was like, hey, you really need to go home, buddy.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? You signed in today. I'll sign you out. None of that. It was just like, yeah, well, that's radio, buddy. Yeah. You got to keep working.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And like, I was answering phones. I was doing phone screening and having to take breaks to cough between callers. It was horrible.
The sickest I have ever been in my adult life was when I had mono. And I was working full time. Maybe I had not been in the job that long. But I just so clearly remember, and I had the kind of boss that said, you come in unless you're dead. I mean, you are going to work unless you are on your deathbed. And I did. And I worked Monday through Thursday with mono. That's the worst earache I have ever had. I remember waking up during the night and putting a blow dryer on my ear just to ease the pain a little bit. It was horrible. And he expected me to be there.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, do you know how contagious this is?
Yeah, it's bad.
And then finally, when I got like the diagnosis of mono, I was like, I can't. We share microphones,
right,
for crying out loud. We share little studios like this. And I remember and that was the same boss, and I think there's a common thread. He was the same boss who thought it was perfectly acceptable to contact me on vacation for little things. I can't find this phone number. Mm-hmm. I remember that was a call one time when I was on vacation. And I don't think, in my experience and our experience here, I think that has gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
Because that just doesn't make any sense. Do you want someone to be sick for 2 weeks, or do you want them to be sick for a couple of days and stay at home and then get better and be good at their job again.
There's a story that goes along with this that just came out. A new survey found that a majority of Americans are now using their PTO and not taking sick days, not taking vacation. They're taking PTO just to sleep.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that they're taking it just to relax, to rest. And the reason why is, one, can't afford vacation anyway. Two, I'm not sleeping because I've got a full-time job and then a gig job that I have.
Yeah.
And the other reason is, like, I don't get enough rest because I'm too stressed out. Whether I had the time to sleep or not, I'm too stressed to do it.
If I thought taking
things are going great, guys,
days off work to sleep, I would. If I thought I would sleep, that sounds like a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. Also, all that would do is help me catch up for a day, and then I'm right back where I started.
I would take some nice knockout drugs
for a couple of days,
I could see, I could see doing that. I don't believe in the whole sleep debt thing, and that's kind of been scientifically canceled out.
Some have said that it helps a little bit.
I don't believe that it's accumulated, you know?
Right.
I think you just, whatever. If you compiled my, it would be up to the point of the national debt at this point. From working, and you're the same way.
Same thing.
From working morning radio.
Morning radio for 20 years.
Yeah.
And then some.
And then I'm just not somebody who likes to go to sleep before midnight.
Like, you don't want to miss out on things.
I know. I don't like sleeping. I genuinely don't. My wife does not understand it. I'm just like, I like being up. I like watching videos. I like listening.
Fun.
I like playing video games. I like reading. Like, sleeping is boring. It's just laying there, and then the blackness comes in, and then it comes out, and then you're awake the next day.
Are you kidding me? I went to bed at 8:30 last night, and I woke up at 7:27.
Shut up.
Congratulations.
I did miss some of the baseball games last night, and that's a
little
sad.
Poor baby.
But.
And I bet you didn't wake up at all during those 11 hours.
No.
No, you just slept right through it.
I sleep like a rock.
Oh.
I woke up.
I hope that changes for you.
I woke up because I couldn't breathe through my nose, so I had to spray Afrin up there.
I was up.
That's it.
And the dog sleeps with me. The foster dog, Claire, is still with me. And she sleeps in the bed with me, which helps me sleep a little bit. There's something about hearing her breathe that helps a little bit. But I'm still up every 90 minutes or 2 hours. I'm sure she's getting annoyed because she gets up and follows me absolutely everywhere I go. And so she wakes up and follows me also. And then she's sleeping right now. She can sleep all day. So, Quentin, again, that's the 90-year-old in you.
Yeah.
That can sleep.
I just had some nice pea soup, covered myself in a blanket, and went to sleep.
I do have a question about this study.
Yeah.
What, if you were to compare it to a 2018 study,
mm-hmm.
as to
which one, the PTO study or the don't come in sick thing?
Come in sick thing.
Yeah. No, I think it definitely was affected by COVID.
Yeah, pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID,
there was a different attitude.
And I think now 100%. There's a lot of people that are like, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming up, speaking of people who maybe should have taken the day off, two Delta jets collided at LaGuardia. How does that happen in 2025?
Oh, man. It was bad, too.
How does that even happen? We'll talk about that on midday.
So these problems had quieted down for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Remember all the problems we were having all over the country?
Yeah.
But then it happened again at LaGuardia in New York City last night. Flight 5047 had just arrived from Charlotte, North Carolina, when the wing of flight 5155 preparing to depart to Roanoke, Virginia, hit the nose of the other aircraft.
Hmm.
So it was the 5155. Its nose hit 5047. The pilot of flight 5047 radioed the ground controller in audio that exists out there. We have two CRJs on the taxiway M that collided. Their right wing clipped our nose and the cockpit windscreens. Happened at the intersection of taxiways M and A. FAA is investigating. Noted that air traffic control had instructed flight 5155 to wait to cross the intersection to yield to the other aircraft. So now we know whose fault it is.
Yeah. All I know is there's a government shutdown going on right now, and I'm sure with the if we have to not have air traffic controllers, these problems are only going to get better.
Flight attendant was hurt, injured her knee, had to go to a hospital.
I mean, how does this even happen in this day and age?
It happens when, and I mean, I don't know how this happened, but very often it happens when somebody, it's usually not air traffic controller's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Usually air traffic control gives instructions and we have that on tape, and somebody doesn't listen or didn't hear it right, or didn't, but somehow that is not communicated clearly to the person that should have heard it.
Right.
And that's, and I'm, given that this is 5155 that hit it, did they not hear it? Did they not, did they think they could beat it? Mm. I don't know, but it's, we didn't used to have problems like this.
Yeah.
This is a new problem, or at least it happens a lot more often now than it did even a year ago.
Do you think it's just people in general aren't as focused as they used to be?
Possibly.
Is it somebody was looking at their phone when they shouldn't have? I mean, right now they all are working without pay. There's that problem.
Yeah.
That complication. But
pilots aren't. I mean.
No, but if it's an air traffic control issue,
But it sounds like air traffic control told 5155 to wait.
And then they just went.
Mm. So maybe they misheard it. That happens a lot where they mishear it. I mean, if you hear air traffic control audio, you got to really pay attention to make out what they say. I don't know if it sounds the same in your cans. But
don't they usually have to like confirm they heard it and then repeat it back before they go?
For
and then
that
maybe
reason.
The air traffic controller didn't hear them. I don't know. But yeah, crazy situation. Fortunately, nobody was seriously injured. Coming up, a local mom. She's trying to get kids off of phones. She's leading a national movement in this. How much time do your kids spend on their phones every day?
What a fight.
Talk about that coming up on Midday.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.